Turn to Proverbs, the fourth chapter of Proverbs, starting with verse 20. Proverbs 4:20 through 27. My son, attune to my words, incline thine ear to my sayings. Let them not depart from thine eyes, keep them in the midst of thine heart. For they are life unto thee that find them, and health to all their flesh. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Put away from thee a forward mouth, and a perverse lips put not far from thee. Let thine eyes look right on, and let thine eyelids look straight before thee. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all the ways be established. Turn not to the right hand nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil.
Good morning. I want to thank Brother Jim for that reading out of Proverbs chapter 4. Now, for the last month or so, Mike and I have been blazing our own trails on the topics this morning, and I have been focusing on lessons that we can learn from Sunday school songs that we sing as children, but we don't always consider them after we get older. And there are still some good lessons that we can learn from these basic songs that we teach children as they're growing up. Like I said, there's lots of lessons in them, but most of the time, since they're in a children's song, people relegate them as just lessons for children. But there are, like I said, some wonderful thoughts found in them that we can apply to our adult lives. Now, the song I've chosen for today's lesson is, "Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see." And as you know, the basic verse goes, "Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see. Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see. For the Father up above is looking down in love. So be careful, little eyes, what you see." The song then repeats several more times, adding in different, basically, you know, parts of the body, replacing eyes with ears, then with hands, and then with mouth, then with feet, and then with, well, then I put hands again. Yeah, just hands just once. We don't do that twice. Not all of these are mentioned in the passage here in Proverbs. So I am going to focus on the ones that are mentioned here in Proverbs chapter 4. Now, in the passage Jim read, it doesn't begin right away with talking about some of the concepts of our song, but it does start to begin with him giving his son advice on living. And the verses that precede the verses that I'm going to focus on for the most part this morning, the verses reveal to us that God knows man's heart. He doesn't rely upon just the outward appearance or the outward actions. He knows a man's heart. An example of that would be when Samuel goes to the house of Eliab to appoint a king. God said that the house of Jesse, and he sees Eliab, who we're told is, you know, very appealing, very good looking, you know, all that. And to Samuel's mind and to his eyes, that's the king of Israel right there. That's the new king of Israel. But of course it was David, because God knew David's heart and knew that he would be a proper king, because God doesn't look at what man can see. So even though we like to think that our hearts are hidden and our thoughts are kept secret, that's just not the case. God is able to know all that we have in our minds. So Solomon's advice to his son is, you know, it's a lot about what to do and what not to do, but in Solomon's words here, he's saying everything that you do and don't do begins with the heart, and you need to focus on that, because from the heart flows how we live. What's in our heart will dictate more often than not. We can fool some people, you know, fool people some of the time, but for the most part, our heart is who we are and will direct our actions, and then our consequences are based upon those actions that we take. And so he tells
his son to guard his heart. But what happens when the heart is not guarded? Well, the problem is that we have our bad thoughts that usually tend towards being a selfish nature. The old saying that, you know, I'm looking out for number one, well, that means I'm looking out for myself, everybody else comes second. And that is a problem when you aren't having a proper heart. Now, Genesis chapter 6, verse 5 reads, "The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." I doubt that evil that is being expressed here is the evil that someone would commit on behalf of someone else. Usually when there's an evil act that's committed, there's a consequence associated with it. If you rob someone, you could go to prison. If you hit someone that's bigger than you, they could hit you back much harder. There are consequences for doing evil. It's not a very... You don't find many evildoers who are looking to do evil on behalf of someone else. They are usually only willing to take that risk of the consequences that may come from your actions if it benefits them. So it doesn't have to be that extreme where God saw that everyone was just out for themselves. It could be someone just maybe the way they are planning their lives. In the account of the parable of the rich fool, the short-sightedness of the rich man shows that his thoughts were selfish thoughts. They were on himself. They could have included others. In Luke chapter 12, verses 17 through 21, as we read about the parable of the rich fool, "And he," meaning the rich fool, "thought to himself, 'What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops.' And he said, 'I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God.'" Now, I will admit, when I was much younger, I didn't understand what the problem here was. Well, it just makes sense. If you run out of room, you build more room. I have a second shed in my yard now for different things that I've accumulated over the years. And now, I don't think anyone wants my used rake or something. I mean, but the concept is, this man, instead of just trying to build up more and more for himself, he could have used that to benefit others. And that wasn't his mindset. His mindset was, what's in it for me? And he went about trying to make arrangements to be able to keep more than what he needed. Instead of looking to see how his abundance could help others, he was looking about how it could help him. So there are examples right now within this congregation that I know are doing just the opposite of that. They have taken advantage of what the Lord has blessed them with, and they are using it to help others. They're putting others in front of themselves. And so that is to be encouraged. But unfortunately, when we focus on what is good only for us, we find our hearts not being in alignment and wandering from God. So, what can we do to guard our heart? Well, it begins by what you put into the heart. So we need to pay attention to what we consume on a daily basis. In Luke 8, verse 18, Jesus says, "Take heed then how you hear." So we need to pay attention to this advice given by Solomon. We need to heed it. Parents have the responsibility to train their children correctly, and that's what Solomon was doing here. He was leaving this advice for his son, and we can apply his thoughts to our lives the same as hopefully Solomon's son was able to do. But of course, as adults, we need to realize that Solomon isn't our father, but the Lord in heaven is our father, and we are his children. So we need to look to him and the words that he's given us, including these found here in Solomon, to let him train us as well. And so with keeping all that in mind, let's go ahead and look at the rest of the passage. So if we look at the part of the song that says, "So be careful, little mouth, what you say," we can find a correlating passage in verse 24 of Proverbs 4. Solomon says in that verse, put away from you crooked speech and put devious talk far from you. This fits in really nicely with the song. Now, part of guarding your heart is to remove certain words, because those words reflect a sinful world, a sinful nature, if we aren't careful. Now, the third chapter of the book of James spends 12 verses devoted to the dangers of the tongue. Verse 8 of chapter 3 of James reads, but no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. Solomon, of course, being very wise, understood this, and he was right for stressing the importance of controlling and correcting the words that you choose to use. And he also says you need to eliminate what can harm you. But earlier in the book of James, in chapter 1, I feel James makes an even more important statement regarding speech. If we look at James chapter 1, verses 25 and 26, those verses read, but the one who looks into the perfect law, the law of liberty, and perseveres, being no hearer who forgets, but a doer who acts, he will be blessed in his doing. If anyone thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his heart, this person's religion is worthless. Verse 25 tells us that the person who knows and familiarizes themselves with the perfect law of liberty is going to go out and act upon that. They're going to live their life. They're going to use that as a basis for how their lives should be lived, and they accordingly then go out and do it. They're not going to read it and forget it and then go on and do what they want to do. They are doers of it. But did you notice what it is that James says regarding the person who does not bridle their tongue in verse 26? They deceive themselves if they think they are, for lack of a better term, religious. By looking at the perfect law of liberty and thinking they're living up to it, but yet they don't bridle their tongue and control their tongue, they are doing exactly what James says here. They're just deceiving themselves. James affirms the need to control what it is that we say. This would, of course, include profane, blasphemy and so forth, but it doesn't have to be something that if someone said a certain word, everybody would look and, wonder what was said, but it includes, just lying, coarse jokes, gossiping, spreading rumors about other people. Even grumbling and complaining can be a way that we don't have control of our tongue. These things, which are no less sinful than cursing at someone or something of that nature, they are going to trip us up in our lives as a Christian. They're going to stop us from being that religious person that James tells us that we would be deceiving ourselves if we don't. The best way I truly feel to help yourself in keeping your words pure, and frankly this applies to the other lessons I'm going to focus on from this song, can be found in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33, where it says, do not be deceived. Good company ruins good morals. An awful lot of what we struggle with in our lives is because of who we choose to be around. Now, I want to stress by choose, because there are always going to be situations that are out of your control that you can't do much about. It used to be, if you're on a ship, you would say, boy, that guy swears like a sailor. That was kind of how that environment was, but it used to be that if you worked in an office, it was a professional setting, people spoke, properly. I don't want to say G-rated, but, generally, there wasn't a lot of swearing in the office. I had a job I worked at about 20 years ago. We would host some students from Fairmont High School that would come in, and they would kind of learn how the IT side of our company worked. And they would come in a couple days a week, and they would kind of observe and shadow what we were doing. And we'd put them to work and do a few things. And they were getting some hands-on training. And I remember there was this one boy that he just was swearing constantly. And I would tell him, I don't want you doing that. You need to because I don't want you to do that around me. But two, in the workplace, you're going to find that's not acceptable. Well, go 20 years forward, and I'm wrong. That is how the workplace is now. There are people that That's just part of how they do their jobs. And so I can't necessarily control that. Now, working from home the last year has been really nice in that regard. But there are going to be places where you can control and then places you can't control. So you need to be aware of those examples, I mean, those times where you can control it, and that'll help you be able to maintain things that you are keeping out of your heart. Now, there are friends that when I was in high school that, you know, I hung out with just because of I was in high school with them every day, but I didn't choose to be associate with them after hours or whatever. But there were friends that I did hang out that now looking back on it, I probably would exercise better judgment and not hang out with them. Just a little bit of swearing is still swearing that you're around. They didn't swear as bad as others, so maybe they were the friends that I could hang out with. But it's not only just the friends you choose to associate with, it also is the movies and the TV shows that you watch that'll give you a chance to control what you hear. I use a website called Common Sense Media, and I go in, if there's a movie I'm interested in, I'll go and look, and more times than not, I'm disappointed because it'll tell you if they're swearing, it'll tell you if there's nudity in it, and so forth. And I just use that as a basis for what I choose to consume. But I'm not focusing on the be careful little ears portion of this song, but I am going to focus, these thoughts apply to that situation as well, about how you could avoid hearing things that will maybe cause your heart to not be guarded. Another verse in that song that I'm going to focus on is, be careful little eyes what you see. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 25 tells us, let your eyes look directly forward and your gaze be straight before you. When learning to drive, you surely heard the phrase, keep your eyes on the road. If you're learning to hit a golf ball, or maybe when you're growing up trying to play baseball or softball, what would your coach tell you? Keep your eye on the ball. Can't hit what you can't see. If there's an athlete that's training for an event, or a student is, you know, trying to graduate college or, you know, with honors or whatever, they may put a lot of toil in and studying. Or perhaps it's just someone in a job that's looking for a promotion and they're working hard and working weekends and just trying to get to where they want to be. That's all toil and drudgery at times. It takes motivation to help you achieve those goals. And so what does someone tell you? You need to keep your eyes on the prize. Now, why are they told this? Because to accomplish anything, you need to concentrate on the task that's at hand and not allow yourself to be distracted or discouraged. I think we've probably all seen, you know, a video of someone who's like walking down a sidewalk and they trip and fall, or even I've seen where people will fall in a fountain because they've got their phone in their hand and they're reading whatever and they're not paying attention to what's going on around them. If your eyes are not focused on where you're going and where you're heading, and you lose attention, you're going to trip and fall, you're going to stumble, you're not going to get to where you need to be, maybe all in one piece. But we are to keep our eyes on what we desire. We need to keep our eyes focused on Jesus, who Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2 tells us he is the founder and perfecter of our faith. Hebrews 12, 1 through 2 reads, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. The Hebrew writer here tells us that we need to have endurance. We have to have that endurance to finish the race that is set before us. But there's going to be distractions that will test us, and there are going to be people and certain events that will do everything possible to stop us from continuing the race. And so the passage tells us that if we look towards Jesus, if we keep our eyes on Jesus, we can see an excellent example of faith and endurance. Jesus endured so much when he was here on the earth. He endured the derision that came from the Jewish leaders, always testing him, always trying to trip him up. even those who were closest to him, his disciples, doubting him or just flat out not understanding what he was trying to tell them at times. And finally, we're told here, he endured the shame that came from the death that he went through on the cross. But why did he do all this? Well, the passage tells us for the joy that he knew that awaited him. And that joy was his being able to sit at the right hand of the throne. That was what allowed him to go through what he went through. And so amidst all the trials to which you may face, defending your faith or just trying to live a faithful life, we have this example to help us endure what we face here on earth. And if we do so, we have a reward, and we have the triumph of heaven waiting for us if we are able to do so. Now, remember earlier I mentioned about that student or that athlete or that employee trying to get further along and about keeping their eye on the prize? Well, that is 100% a biblical concept. In Philippians chapter 3, verse 14, the passage reads, I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. Here Paul tells the Philippians that he knows what the prize is, and he is constantly working towards it. Verse 29 of Philippians 3, Paul says, the prize is citizenship in heaven. Brother Lee spoke about that this very week. I won't speak on that, and plus my time is quickly ending. But verses 16 and 17 of Philippians 3 says the key to gaining that citizenship, and that is going to be accomplished by imitating Paul and keeping your what on others? Paul says, keep your eyes on those that can help you gain that eternal life in heaven. Then the last part of the song I want to focus on is where it says, be careful, little feet, where you go. Finally, Solomon here in Proverbs chapter 4 focuses on watching where we're going. Proverbs 4, 26 and 27 simply reads, ponder the path of your feet, then all your ways will be sure. Do not swerve to the right or to the left. Turn your foot away from evil. Now, Solomon tells us to ponder the path that we're on. And I just always associated ponder was just think, you know, sit and think about something. But I was curious. So the definition of ponder is think about something carefully, especially before making a decision or reaching a conclusion. That's a perfect word then for what Solomon's trying to tell us here. The time that we should be thinking about doing anything we're going to be doing, especially a journey that we're going to begin, the time to be thinking about that is before you begin. And that's how ponder is brought in here. We should examine the path that we're considering. We should weigh the pros and the cons and try to identify any traps or any pitfalls that may be on that path and would be awaiting for us. And like I said, this is always good advice, and we need to test our, you know, the plans that we have and where they're going to lead us and where our feet will be taking us and make sure that they're headed where they need to be. Jesus, as he was coming to the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 7, verses 13 and 14, made this very well-known statement. Enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way that is easy that leads to destruction, and those who enter by it are many. For the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. The wide and easy path requires no pondering whatsoever. You can just walk out your door and do whatever you want, because if you don't have a plan, you're going to just go the easy way. Just like we're told water always follows the path of least resistance, that's how most people in this world live their lives. If it's going to require something of them, they'll go the opposite direction. But this easy path that most people take, we're told, leads directly to destruction. But the narrow gate and the path that leads the way to it, now that's a little bit more difficult. There's going to be those traps and pitfalls I mentioned earlier. We're told this is going to be a difficult path. There's going to be traps. There's going to be areas where you could stumble and fall. And Solomon's advice here really pays off. He says, if your journey's not going to be successful if you don't plan beforehand. And so faithfully execute the plan that you set out if you want to have that ability to end your journey successfully. Only after pondering this journey are you able to come up with that proper game plan and complete your journey. So Solomon encouraged his son with these words of wisdom. He encouraged him to live a life that's a good one in service to the Lord. And we also can find good advice for our lives in his word and in the song that we looked at this morning. At this time, Brother Pickard has the prayer, and after that we'll be dismissed to class.